Hi, everyone. Welcome to Here for the Health of It podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We have a great episode for you today. We have Dr. Treva Anderson, who is a PhD and a performance coach. She's a sports psychology consultant. She works with high-level athletes, helping them to reach their peak potential. She also works with businesses. Pretty much anything that you need in terms of mindset, performance, she answers all of that. We get in deep into it. We get talk about golf a lot, obviously. We talk about bodybuilding, weightlifting, and all the other different components of mindset. So thanks for listening. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Here for the Health of It podcast. I'm Dr. Randy, and I'm here with Dr. Tom. As always, we're Columbia's hottest, fastest growing, and best podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We have a great show today. So we have Treva Anderson, who is a sports psychologist consultant. You help people when their mind is wrong or their mind is weak. You help them to get strong.
Yes, and I also enjoy people that are performing really well and they want to do even
be a little better.
Yeah. So they're already strong, but they want to be stronger.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of into that. That's well, my mindset, I'm a steel trap right now. Well, I like the idea of taking a house that's already pretty good and making it better, or that's not great and then improving it.
Yes.
Whereas I feel like Tom likes just from scratch,
high and tight,
absolutely nothing, just gets to control everything from the very beginning. So what's your ideal client, or what does a normal scenario look like when someone comes to see you?
So those are two very different.
Let's start with ideal client then.
So ideal client is an individual that recognizes their mental and physical strengths, and they have goals that they're working towards, and they are curious about what else they could do. And that can be in the sport realm, that can be in any other performance. I work with individuals who are more on the business side, other areas of performances.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like business is just a natural place to move to, because the sports world, there's not necessarily a ton of money in it until they get bigger.
Yeah.
They hit a certain point. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so then what does a normal session look like?
For those clients?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other side of it, sometimes it looks a little different. So the beginning of my work is always with a needs analysis. So figuring out what are their mental strengths that they're regularly using? What are some of those mental skills that they're not frequently using? And then matching that up with their goals. Sometimes people say they're clear about their goals, but they're not as clear as they could be. So we help to clarify the goals and then figure out whatever needs to happen in order to get them to that part. So if they're struggling with the way that they deal with adversity, you know, when something goes wrong, then we need to figure out, okay, how do we work through this? And there's different mental skills that I'll coach them on.
Yeah.
Nice. Do you watch golf?
I work with golfers. I prefer not to watch it too much.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't play?
No.
Okay.
I don't play.
Wyndham Clark has I was watching Full Swing on Netflix, and he's like now climbing up to the top. He's been second place the last two, but I saw that he hired, I think it's you, basically, not you.
Yeah, not but me him, per se,
but,
yes.
But somebody. Mm-hmm. And now he's been unbelievable over the past like 3 years. What do you typically see? When do you start seeing success when you start working on somebody? Like, is it fairly quick, or is it a process of months, if not years?
So usually the athlete will see it fairly quickly. I try to temper expectations and suggest that it might be a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. Partly because when there's immediate success, sometimes they assume, all right, I'm fixed. Like, I don't need to keep going back or keep doing the work. And that's simply not true, right? Mental skills are just like any other skill. You need to practice it over time in order to develop some mastery at that. And so that needs to continue. So a lot of times my clients will say, oh yeah, I'm feeling pretty good after like three sessions, but we need to work through the higher level of, you know, how that skill is developing in order to get to true mastery of that mental skill.
Today's episode is brought to you by our sponsor, Columbia Family Chiropractic, with three easy to get to locations, one in Forest Acres, which is by Trader Joe's, one in O'Neill Court by the DMV, and one in the Northeast by Sand Hills. You'll be sure to have somewhere near you. They offer a ton of services, from corrective care on-site digital x-rays, spinal decompression for bulging or herniated discs, dry needling for injuries, pediatric care, and a class 4 laser. They accept all your major insurances. And if you mention this ad, you'll get a discount on your first appointment. Check out their website at cfcforhealth.com or Google Columbia Family Chiropractic. That's cfcforhealth.com.
Gotcha.
So I would usually prefer about 3 months before we see lasting performance change.
And is there a hierarchy? Like, is there like a stair-step kind of process where you assess them or you talk with them and you find out like you're on step 2, or is that not a thing?
So it could be. I prefer not to work that way because everyone is a little bit different. And so usually they might be, you know, there's typically like 5 to 6 main mental skills that I work with. You might be at step 2 on 1, you know, with confidence. And
yeah,
then,
what are those skills? What are the 5 to 6 mental skills?
So in general, there's 3 things that I'm working on. It's managing their thoughts, their energy, and their attention. And then there's subsets of each of those.
Nice.
That's good.
That is good. I feel like I'm great at 2 of those.
Which 2?
Thoughts and energy. Right. I think my attention gets pulled a lot of different ways.
By what?
I don't know. Whether it could be the phone, it could be kids, it could be work, it could be, I don't even know.
So part of the process.
I'm a fidgeter.
Okay, so you need some physical movement.
Yeah.
Part of the process is figuring out what is pulling your attention away and where are you allowing it to go to.
Like, would you film me for a day?
Probably not.
That would be great, just watching 24 hours of film of him.
Observations can be very helpful, though.
Gotcha.
So I try to encourage that self-awareness being built, though, because it doesn't help if you never learn how to recognize when your attention is going to somewhere else and how to pull it back.
I mean, have you seen now with social media that people are recognizing their attention's there, but they can't pull away?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like, I know I need to stop flipping, but the algorithm or however they've set it up is like next, and hours
Absolutely.
Go by.
Absolutely.
What do you do? Like, I guess walk us through some ways to break that down. So one, being aware of where it's going, then what?
Yeah. So awareness of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then a clarity of what the goal is. So if you want to make sure that you're not allowing hours to go towards social media, then figuring out what's a more reasonable goal. So if, sometimes people will say, you know, I'm spending like 2 hours mm-hmm. and I want to spend 1. Okay, well, let's figure out some methods. Sometimes it's as simple as putting a timer on your phone. Mm-hmm. Other things can be cues. So putting some of those boundaries on is the next step. But then again, it's recognizing, how do I feel when I spend 2 hours on social media?
Right.
How do I feel mentally, emotionally, and physically?
Like disgusting.
Yeah. And most people do. Sometimes it's more emotional.
Yeah.
But then, of course, the way our bodies are, it's all interconnected. So then you start to feel bad physically. So again, it's consistently building that self-awareness with people of how are you feeling versus how do you want to be feeling? And then where can we continue to grow? So figuring out what is the most important thing that you should be focused on is usually a core part of what I work with.
So do you run into some people who have too many goals in too many different areas?
Yeah.
I feel like that's my problem. This year I really want to break 80 in golf. I've never done it. I shot 80 one time. I had a chance at 79. I missed by 3 inches. Mm. I think three inches. It was really close. But my time is always... I've got my business goals that are pretty clear, mm-hmm. podcast goals that are pretty clear. Mm-hmm. I've got my marriage goals. I've got my goals with my kids. I've got my health and my fitness goals. And I want my golf goals to be higher, but I just don't know where to put them.
Like, have you ever looked at somebody and been like, you're just not physically capable? Because I think that's where Randy said that.
So I don't say that, I
peaked 4 years ago at 80. But it's a big goal. But Tom sends me memes like monthly talking about people who can't break 80 in golf. I'm like, I'm just going to do it one time. But I think I mentally don't know if I want it bad enough to give up somewhere else, which I need to go through like a needs analysis process to figure out where I'm willing to give up in order to achieve that.
Yeah. And sometimes you also can combine some goals. Like, I don't know, maybe your wife or kids like to play. So you can get some practice and achieve both of those things. It really is important to just kind of lay everything out and figure out if I want this goal bad enough, yes, there should be some sacrifices, but it shouldn't be that other parts of your life are completely delinquent. And so then you're, you know, you're really unhappy with that part of your life just so that you can break the week.
And this, so this morning I had a lesson and my wife's like, I need you to change it. I need you to, like, I've got this going on and the kids this and that. And I told her, like, this year there's just too much riding on me breaking 80. I went to my lesson anyway. So I'm like a little bit in the doghouse, which, yeah. But I was like, I need to talk to you about this and find out what to do.
So I would say that we need to look at what's going on in your golf game.
Right.
What are the mental barriers?
Yes.
What do you think it is? There a, so say it's hole, there's 18 holes in golf.
Yep.
Say hole 14. You're like, man, I'm playing really well. Like that mm-hmm. thought creeps in there. Like, I'm doing really well. I'm on pace.
Yeah.
Does that in it of itself, like, it's still a positive thought, but yeah. it also triggers your negative. Like, I'm going to screw mm-hmm. it up somewhere here.
Yeah. So you all have probably heard the term flow or in the zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really just a state of being with your emotional and mental state. And as soon as you realize, like, hey, I'm doing great, you're out of it.
So you don't even want to realize that.
You're out of flow.
That's where you drink enough booze where you're oblivious. You stay in there. So that's what, so there's one takeaway, Randall.
Yeah.
There's blood alcohol level.
The other thing, so you mentioned that positive thought. So I don't encourage positive thoughts when it comes to performances.
Really?
Yeah. It's all about effective thoughts. So we need to figure out how this thought affects my energy and how that energy is going to affect my performance.
That's good.
Oh, listen, Treva, he needed you bad.
This wasn't really about the podcast.
I got to hire you let him work with you.
That's what he's afraid of.
I'm
going to be screeching to the top. Well, I think that's pretty valuable, because sometimes I'll see people who have, I know they, what I would consider negative thoughts. They're talking negatively to themselves, but it's like the more negative they talk to themselves, the better they do.
Yes.
And they just need it. And they're even, when I was playing hockey, there was some guys who the coach would scream at them and they would shut down.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, all right, it looks like he's serious. I'm going to give it a little extra this time. And it was effective for me.
Yes. Yeah. We see that constantly. And sometimes it's just dependent on the activity that you're doing. So, you know, the bodybuilders, weightlifters that I've worked with, sometimes that explosive power comes when you're a little bit more aggressive. So we need a thought that's going to lead towards that type of energy.
Oh, that's what you were looking at my arms when you said that too. She's like, bodybuilders looked at my arms.
So hockey
Thank
is
you.
A good but example.
Yeah, okay. Hockey is good. Bodybuilding.
He thanked you.
No, bodybuilding. I'm curious about bodybuilding too, because there's always a certain point where you have to go further than what is comfortable, and you're risking injury if you get to a certain weight, size, number of reps, and you just never know where the line is until you hit it.
Yeah. And that does go for a lot of different performances and other sports as well. But yes, you need to know what I encourage my clients, you need to know your body well enough to know that, of course, there are some sort of physical limitations, but you need to be able to push yourself, right? If you want to achieve bigger, greater things, you need to understand, I need to get outside of that limitation and push myself. But you need to know where's that line as close as possible. And you're the best person to know. I mean, sometimes coaches underestimate people greatly.
Yes.
They're like, oh, yeah, you can't do that. Like, well, the human mind and desire can push so much.
So you find that negativity creates better outcomes than feeling like the positive?
You might need more negative thought patterns in your mind.
No, people have tried that. People, because like when we do golf, people can say stuff and that does nothing. Like even if like they're trying to get me revved up to like play better or whatever, I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's highly, highly dependent. And I wouldn't say that's across the board negative, more effective. It really depends on what that thought generates for you. Like sometimes trash talking.
Yeah.
That'll get you.
People will get going.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah,
fires them up.
Yep.
You want someone to trash talk.
Yeah. And that's all about how that type of thought and environment affects your energy. That's all that is.
I think I'm better. If I'm doing bicep curls in the mirror and I'm saying like, oh, your arms are tiny. They're just so little. Everyone's laughing at them.
I
would for sure do more.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good example.
So how, in your opinion then, how much does the mind control the physical? Like how much does that Because I'm a big proponent of that.
Yeah.
Like, it's, to me, it's the number one thing.
So it is.
In health. Yeah. In just everything.
So across the board, I believe that, and there's research that backs that up. You know, there's a book, Endure, and it's about the 4-minute
mile,
four-hour marathon break, or two-hour. And
2-hour marathon?
Guy did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so
insane. Under 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah.
My marathon is over 5 hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, keep going.
And what was Oprah's?
Right around there, right?
Oprah beat me by 45 minutes.
It's okay. You can try again.
I don't know if it's real. I just don't see how Oprah ran that fast.
I kind of agree.
I know.
But I don't know. I didn't watch her train.
Well, now we know she's a cheater. She's promoting Ozempic. So she probably cheated.
Quite possibly. Yeah, quite possibly. True. So that
she's probably not even doing it. She probably got lipo and she's saying that she did it.
Or hired somebody that looks like her to run it.
Might be the smart thing to do.
So Endure.
So that book talks about some of the research that they looked at, that it really, you can train physically, like everything totally controlled. But at the end of the day, the mind can push that desire, that drive, that motivation, the support of others, that can push you so much more. So your mind is always going to be influencing. Now, of course, you can't just think your way into a good performance. You can't think your way into under 80, but you can set the conditions to allow your body to do what you need to do.
Because I've seen, and I don't know if this was, I think these were studies, like a guy who, they did like somebody to shoot free throws, like basketball shots, somebody who thought about shooting him, and then somebody who maybe just mimicked the motion, or I forget what it was. And the guy who thought about doing it, like seeing the ball going in, outperformed the person that actually practiced.
So there was some research that you may be talking about, they actually found physical practice does a little bit better than mental practice. So mental imagery, if it's highly vivid, you're imagining exactly what that movement should be. That actually allows your muscles to get almost like a mini practice.
Yeah.
They're not physically going through it, so they don't get that physical feedback, but your mind is preparing the muscles to execute the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, and there was a similar story. I think it was a guy who was in prison who hadn't played golf and who went through the motions and visually saw like every single hole, every single shot, and then when he came out, he did it.
Yeah, there was a story of a Olympian many years ago. Pretty sure he was a weightlifter. He broke his back like 6 weeks before the Olympics, and he had been working with a sports psychologist, and they went to him in the hospital and said, all right, we're going to get to work.
Yeah.
He just did mental imagery to the point where he was sweating after every rep. And he was
in
able
his
to,
mind.
Yeah. And he was able to medal.
That's where I think I excel.
Wow.
I'm super strong in my mind.
I think that's cool. I really like that.
I love it. It's fascinating to me.
And I think lots of people do the opposite where they picture themselves, they have anxiety, and they picture all the things that could go wrong constantly, and then something does go wrong because they pictured it over and over again.
Yep, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about attention. What are the things that you do with energy if somebody has an energy issue?
So we need to determine what is contributing to that. So obviously a lot of things can contribute to energy. I talk a little bit with people about sleep, talk a little bit about nutrition. I know more about sleep than I do about nutrition. So usually it's just what are you eating? How much are you eating, drinking? Those kinds of things. Sleep is vital. But then we look at your energy in terms of mental, emotional, and physical. So the physical side, that's where I have less expertise, but the mental and emotional, what are you thinking about?
Yeah.
How is that affecting you? Are you rejuvenated when you think about this? Are you drained when you think about that? And starting to track those things that you're focusing on.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. And is there certain things that always come up one way or the other way? Or is everybody different?
Pretty much everyone's different. Usually if somebody is thinking about avoiding failure, that's going to drain them. If they think about what they love about an activity, that's going to energize them. So, and that's consistent with the research in sports psychology. Enjoyment is always going to be something that is key for peak performers. So you need to enjoy what you're doing, because then you're willing to work harder, consistent effort, persevere when things get tough, take feedback, all that.
And so do you enjoy working with people? Is that how you got into it? You found, oh, I love helping people?
so I found out about sports psychology when I was 17. And I loved watching sports. I loved playing sports. And I was fascinated by the way the mind works. And so it just seemed like this is the perfect combination. Put both of them together and get to really put a lot of thought into how to help people perform at their best consistently.
Yeah, cool.
Now, on the thoughts category, then, is it more affirmations? Is it more like if somebody's having issues with the negative or just their thinking, what would be the process for that one?
So it for me, it would go back to what their goals are for their
clarity
performance.
On what they want.
Yeah. So if you're trying to increase your performance on this task, you actually may not want to consistently tell yourself you're good.
Right.
That may not be helpful. That might build complacency.
Do you see that with kids? Like, I feel like that with kids, like they're stating that they're really good at something and they're really not.
Yeah.
And then they just don't do much.
Yeah. Yeah. And it,
someone has to tell them not great. That's not very good.
Yeah. And sometimes that
teachers don't do that anymore. And sometimes teachers don't do that either. They say, yeah, you're good. And they're not good.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the fine line though. So is this where like the mental skill, let's talk, I guess, kids, because this is where they're the most moldable. Is it something like age 3 to 7 is the most important time of somebody's life, or
at the foundational level, the way that they think, that's where it forms. Yeah. And a lot of times that's based on the modeling of adults.
So is that in that, I guess that's, so as a parent, would you say it's more, it's not so much what you tell your kids, it's what you do around your kids?
I think it's a little bit of both. See? Yeah. But the modeling of it is definitely going to impact it.
What's a good way to communicate to a kid they suck at something?
I mean, you could tell them you suck.
Bad.
Yeah, you could. It's way more helpful to identify exactly what they did wrong as specifically as possible.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So it's not global like you suck.
Right.
Right. You probably shouldn't play that sport. It's way more helpful to say the way that you release that baseball.
Right.
That release wasn't effective. Let's try this.
And that gets them more focused on what to correct.
Yeah.
I told Scarlett this morning during homeschool that her H sucked. So it was disgusting.
You might want to go back to her.
And she fixed it. Yeah, it's better now. I'm like, oh, wow, your H's look way better.
Well, and then, so on that same note, do you, like, I grew up in a small area, basically 6,000 person town, and I was good at sports. Mm-hmm. Great, some say.
Some might say.
He just got inducted into his high school Hall of Fame.
So my thought is, because you're playing against, like, there's a level where I feel like playing against people who like don't really play the sport, and you just dominate them, that gives your confidence as a child, like, I'm awesome, as long as you continue to work, because you will run into bigger fish that you have to then. But that's why I wonder, like, even for my son right now, he's playing in club soccer, which is a higher level soccer. Mm-hmm. But I kind of want him to go back into like a rec league for a little bit, because every time he comes back from school, he's like murders people at school.
Yeah.
But then you get in the club and it's like, dude, you need work. Like, there's a lot still to do. And there's this contrast that I want him to build that confidence. But I also want him to be like, I want to put in the work to go to the next level too.
Yeah. So skill level can plateau if you're playing against people who are below your level.
Right.
So ideally, he needs to be playing with people who are just barely above, not too much, because if it's too much of a gap, that's where his confidence
goes down.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So ideally, just above. Give him something to work
for.
He can
close. Yeah.
He can see that as a model of what he wants to work towards, and hopefully be inspired to continue to work.
Do you have a list of phrases or words or anything that you like consistently teach people?
I'm sure I do.
Like, I know that words matter a ton.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I feel like a list would be very helpful.
You want a script.
To reference. My wife's words of affirmation. And I'm just, I feel like my vocabulary sucks. And so I need more scripting. I need more stuff to be like, yeah, this is, you did good.
Hey, ChatGPT, send my wife a compliment. Yeah.
That's what I literally have to do is I type in ChatGPT. Anytime there's time for cards or anything like that, it's ChatGPT.
I mean, that's a strategy. anytime you're wanting to affirm or praise somebody, it's helpful to be very specific about what they did well.
Gotcha.
So if it's with your wife, what is it that she does that you love? What is it that makes that relationship strong and meaningful for you?
Gotcha.
If it's just generic, nobody listens to that. Like when I work with coaches, tell them, don't tell your athletes good job.
Right.
That gives them no information whatsoever. They don't know what they did that was good, so they don't know what to replicate.
So specificity is a good takeaway. Yes. The more specific, the better.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, and going back to your small town thing, I grew up in a town of about 110,000 people. Mm. And I remember playing hockey. The kids would come from a town, like a little out of town of 6,000 or 8,000, but they were good enough that they were coming into the city to play. Mm-hmm. And you could just see all the parents telling everybody in their small town, he's going to make the NHL. He's the best thing in the whole world. He scores 10 goals a game. And I would just think like, all right, this kid's going to have a little wake up call. Yeah. And then he would just be cutting around the corner and just crush him. And you could just see his family's like dreams falling apart, being like, wait, we thought he was the best in the world. And he can barely even skate now compared to these guys, which is a big issue, I think, for a lot of people, because I've seen that with lots of people. They were the hottest thing in their small town. Mm-hmm. And then they go somewhere a little bit bigger and they're not with people a little bit better. They're with people that are 50 times better, and their confidence just explodes. Gone.
Yeah.
Which is probably the wrong move, right? Should they be going from like 6,000 to 8,000 to a town of 15,000?
Yeah.
Because going from 6,000 to New York City, you'd be like,
yeah, that's huge.
I can't do this.
So ideally their confidence wouldn't be based on other people. And so ideally
internally.
Yeah. Ideally it wouldn't matter. But that's
a good point. Well, how do you know then?
So how do you feel about yourself after playing and interacting with other people? Are you basing your skill level on how other people are? It should be an internal belief about your ability to complete that skill.
Yeah, I like that. I say,
but it's hard to figure out, like in a team sport, especially.
Sure.
You have no clue if you're out there shooting free throws and you're like, oh, that was pretty good. Then you go, but then you realize you're like, oh, I did 200 in a row. And then you find out, oh, Kobe does 15,000 in a row.
Exactly. So I had probably 4 basketball shooters, right? You know, the shooters on the team this last season, and all of them came to see me because they're hesitating, right? They're the best shooter on the team, but they're hesitating. So that's a sign of a lack of confidence. Uh-huh. So the confidence affects your attention. So I'm hesitating because I'm wondering who's going to block me. Is this the right shot? Is the coach going to like it? I'm thinking about all those things, which is a result of that lack of confidence in my ability. So if it's more stable, then other people aren't going to influence it that much.
Interesting. I feel like Tom's strategy, like when he walks into a room, is just like, I'm smarter. They're all dorkier. Like everybody wants to be me, and he just doesn't care.
I don't. Well, and to your point, I always say, like, what does the mirror say? Like, that's what I tell my kids and my wife, which she doesn't love. It doesn't matter what people think. My point is, like, it does not matter what people think. That's where I'm going with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what do you think about how you did A, B, C? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's at the end of the day. It's like, did you work hard? If you worked your hardest in it, then you can lay your head at night. But if you know you're the only one that knows, like, did you give it 90%, 70%? Then, you know you can be hard on yourself then.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the self-awareness that I mentioned earlier comes in. I want all of my clients to have that self-awareness of where was that effort, right? Was it really what it needed to be? In terms of things that I typically say, one of the things that I say is the people that really should be influencing your belief about yourself should be less than a hand. Should be less than 5. And you can include like your family members that mean the most to you. On a team, maybe a coach, if you've got a boss, maybe your boss, but it should not be more than 5.
Would you say the influence?
That would influence how you feel about yourself
that's good.
And your performance.
I like that a lot. Who, like in studying, I imagine you study really high performers and athletes. Mm-hmm. Who would you say has like really good mental acuity or psychology? Like, who comes to mind for me is Deion Sanders.
Oh yeah.
Like, he to me is the epitome of who is just like he walks into a room and he is very confident.
Absolutely. So I did my undergrad and master's at Florida State. So Deion Sanders was a huge guy at Florida State.
Right.
I didn't go when he was there, but he always seemed arrogant back then.
That, and that's the tendency, is they come off as arrogant.
Yes. Yeah. The perception of others, you know, can be one thing. I think as I got to see him as he evolved as a coach, I definitely would agree that his confidence is pretty solid. It's not influenced by the opinions of others. But I do think that's evolved based on watching him.
And what is the fine, like, that's another good point. Like, what's the fine line of people thinking you're arrogant, better than, cocky, versus just being self-confident?
So you can't control the perception of others. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I tell people right away is just keep in mind, don't worry too much about how other people might perceive you. You can take that information in, that's helpful, but don't base everything on that. Generally, the difference between confidence and arrogance is about wanting to be better than other people. Confidence is, I believe I'm good.
Yeah.
And I know it. So that's usually that's the difference. It doesn't matter about anybody else with confidence, but with arrogance, it's only about how am I compared to others.
Yeah. Because I think they get bundled into the narcissistic category as well.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And it's the same sort of thread of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are there any other current athletes that you look at and you're like, wow, the way they handle things is a good thing for our people's kids or people to look up to? Or does everybody have some sort of shit that they got to deal with?
I think most people have some sort of shit that they're dealing with. So I used to say Tiger Woods.
Right.
I think some of the problems he had over the last several years probably indicated he was a little bit, it is a possibility to compartmentalize too much. I think the way that he handled that was probably in that realm.
How about Steph Curry? He seems like he's got a good mindset on.
Absolutely. So he was one of the ones that I was kind of rolling around in my head. I think he consistently enjoys the game.
Right.
And I think that's where he is able to maximize his mental strength. I think that's really the key for him. One of the things that I find working with individuals is there's usually one aspect of their mental game that is the key to everything else kind of falling in place. And I think for him, he loves basketball. Right. He's just always having fun with it. So I think that allows him to keep that strength.
And there's some people that can rise through the ranks in sports or business or whatever without scandal and explosion of every other part of their life.
Yeah.
And then there's a certain other type of person who climbs the ranks and they're great, great, great. And then you see Tiger Woods is an example, but you see everything else explode, their personal life, their health, their finances. And I'm curious what you think the mindset difference between somebody who has longevity and keeps it all together and somebody who rises the ranks and then everything else kind of blows up.
I think it tends to come down to the love of the game. You know, when they get to the pros, it is so easy to be focused on everything else except the game. You know, how much money you're making, how many other people do you have to hire to have your lifestyle, who in your family is now all of a sudden asking for all kinds of money and placing a lot of demands on you. So I think it's easy at that level to be distracted by all of those external things and lose the focus of why are you even there?
So it's so it's probably distraction then that makes it explode.
Yeah, I like that. I think so.
Makes sense.
Now, as far as like physical, like, or I guess let me go this direction first. The mental skills that you said. So you said that kind of everything's based around those three things: thoughts, energy, attention. But then there's mental skills within those.
Yes.
Confidence being one. Yep. What were some of the other?
So confidence, more specifically, kind of managing your thoughts. So sometimes what we talk about there is kind of irrational beliefs, some biases that occur, your mindset, fixed or growth mindset, and being able to control your energy a lot of times is about like deliberate breathing and slowing things down and being able to just relax. Sometimes people want to manage their energy, but they don't even know how to relax.
Right.
So being able to control that's huge. And then within managing your attention, there's a lot of things. So understanding what a distraction is, how to handle that distraction, having some sort of refocus technique. So if the shit does hit the fan, which it's going to at some point, how are you going to be able to come back to whatever your focus needs to be? And then mental imagery, Visualization is usually what a lot of people understand it, but imagery really should include all of your senses to make it more powerful and more real for your brain.
Right.
So I try not to use visualization.
Like you wouldn't be a proponent of a vision board? Or like for Randy, like would he have a vision board? He'd have a golfer that has like a scorecard that says, you know, 79. He'd have maybe some grass so he could smell it.
Do you like the smell of grass? Does that motivate like you?
Maybe like
grass,
a grip.
When
like
I moved to the South, grass just became such a sore spot because it's so hard to grow here.
Oh, yeah.
In Canada, you throw out some seed, you have a beautiful lawn right away.
Really?
And same with Indiana, was the same way. I was the same way here.
It's too hot.
It just doesn't grow. It grows sideways. There's 15,000 different kinds. You have to water it constantly. You need sprinkler systems, fertilizers, weeds.
So grass clearly should not be on the vision board.
Yeah, I don't know why I got that. It's because it's spring. It's because it's spring and I've been thinking about mine a lot.
But like,
not grass. We're talking about golf though. So
so he could attach though, like he would hold a golf ball or a golf club. He could, would he say, because he loves to say, like, I hit the putt the right way. What's your little?
I can't picture myself shooting a 78 mentally.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know, because I've never done it, I think.
Okay, or so for just some because reason, you've never done it means you can't.
I have
do
a
it.
Hard time picturing myself doing it. Yes. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
So
why.
We would need to start there. So honestly, anytime I've had an athlete who has some sort of barrier like that mentally, like, I can't even picture it. A lot of the other strategies wouldn't be as effective until we can start to get you to see
visualize it.
Yeah.
So I should be looking at every hole. So I would go to the course that I want, to shoot 79 at. Mm-hmm. Then I would think hole one, I'm going to shoot a four. Hole two, I'm going to get a birdie. Hole three, I'm going to get a bogey. Hole four,
okay.
I'm going to get
Let
a par.
Let me pause you there. Don't focus on the result. Focus on the process. How are you going to hit a four? And see that.
So I would just think hole. Well, it feels very specific. That's how I have to be very specific. I'm going to go to Wildwood Country Club. I'm going to 250 off the tee. I'm going to hit a 6-iron, roll it up to the
how
green.
How is it going to feel?
I'm going to putt it from off the green to 3 feet. Then I'm going to tap it in.
Yeah. I'm going to whisper in his ear, you're going to blade this wedge. I mean, that's part of the game, right? You have to be able to hand, like, know where you want your ball to be able to see the ball there, know kind of then you're going to have somebody that might whisper in your ear.
Yeah.
Or and whatever.
Music, well, even music I'm finding plays helps a difference. Them. It's a 4 or 5 stroke difference between if I'm listening, my favorite genre of music is country with a little bit of rap in it.
Okay.
Not full rap, but just you know what sprinkle. You know what I mean by that genre? Yes. But there's been times where somebody, I'll be playing and somebody's listening to just full rap music, like and even the older stuff like DMX and Exhibit and those guys. And I'm like blading it all over. I'm getting double bogey, triple bogey. Yes. So I've recognized, and even my friends will notice like, oh wait, we got to change the music because he's playing too good.
Because music has a huge impact on your energy.
It must. Yeah.
It does. Yeah. So you can play with that. I would also encourage you to think about how are you approaching your thought process for every hole? Because it's very easy. You know, it's super common with golfers. Oh, I don't want to hit it in the wall. Or in the water.
Yeah.
Then what are you going to do? You're going to hit it in the water. So you need to tell yourself exactly how you're going to do it successfully, then be able to see it, physically practice it, be able to continue that repetition. Yep.
I think, as I'm thinking about it, do you know what I think is one of my issues?
What's that?
I don't think I practice enough to feel like I deserve to do it, which is.
Oh, I've heard that before. Yeah. Yeah. That's a thing.
Yeah. I think. And I actually, as I'm saying it, I do believe that I don't practice enough to deserve to do it.
Which might be true.
Yeah, it could be true.
Yeah.
Or it could be a limiting belief.
That's what I kind of think, I have the opposite. I was like, I'm going to do I'm going to hit it where I want to. You know what else? Like playing with Mark Losby, we know it's like a huge, if they're teamed up, it's a huge advantage for him because there's something about Mark. He's always given good, positive thoughts. Giving him a little shoulder.
Yes. And he's kind of whispering like, oh no, nobody would have made that shot. Like,
really feminine. Right. He's really feminine. So he's like touching
his
him.
His skin is so nice.
He brushes his skin up against him. It's like, so we know like you got to, that's a couple strokes different.
What I need is his voice in my head.
Just get him to record it.
At certain times.
And then you play.
If it feels like the wheels are falling off, I just need him saying play. Like Tiger Woods wouldn't have made that shot. You don't need to feel bad about it.
Yeah,
he does. Now, you were kind of mentioned a little bit of, about physical cues that change your state, like breathing. Mm-hmm. Could, to kind of walk us through some of that, because I know that Tony Robbins does like the beat the chest and different things to like stir mm-hmm. up energy and scream. And what are some things that you found that that can help either bring people up or down or anything like that?
Yeah. So any so first, you got to figure out where you want your energy to go. Do you want it to go down? You want it to go up? If you want it to go up, any type of movement, music. So fast music, anything that's a little bit higher beats per minute, that sort of thing can be helpful. A lot of that movement, you can actually just shorten your breath. So breathe quicker also. And then if you like need a, to.
Like the stir up, like sympathetic, like yep. fast, like something's chasing you.
Yep, absolutely. And then on the opposite side, just anything that is slow. So slow, calming music, being able to go out and just look at nature. Nature's very calming.
Right.
That can be helpful. And then the breathing, relaxing, just kind of, I tell my clients a lot of times, do a body scan, like how are things feeling?
Where is it tense?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you can relax it.
So see, like, yeah, Mark rubbed your shoulders. It's probably, he's identifying.
Well, tension. I don't know. Yeah. Because I think I generally need things to get me hyped up yeah. more. I think my default is lower.
Yes, for sure.
And then I would need to ramp up.
Anybody that watches us, like if you watch our show, mm-hmm. I'm doing this. Randy is this the yeah. whole yeah. time. And I, like I was telling my wife this past time because I like noticed it. I was like, he doesn't move. I was like, how does he do that? I got to grab a pen. I got two pens. I got to write some. If I have nothing in my mind, I scribble. I just scribble.
Yeah. Which we did have someone the other week. And she said something that was just, it was just, it wasn't anything that you would write down or think about. And she just said like, oh yeah, I have, you know, I have a family and we've just been here for a few hours, for a few years. And he starts like scribbling. She's like, wait, are you writing down that my family's lived here for 3 years? And he's like, no, I just didn't know what to do. So I just started pretending I was writing.
I think I need to lower my energy. I think probably. That's it. Cause yeah. that might play into my heart rate. My heart rate yeah. just boom, 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 boom.
All yeah. the time. So what are you doing to slow it down besides movement? Nothing.
Drinking
slightly
coffee.
Less coffee. You went from possible. 8 cups of coffee a day to 6.
That's probably not helpful.
So, well, that's a good point. So like, sometimes I think like I should work out more to burn it off, but maybe I should do the opposite, which would be like,
I would practice relaxing.
Take a nap.
Not necessarily nap. Practice relaxing,
just,
I think.
Just kind of like a bubble sitting
bath,
still.
Maybe.
Should I take a bubble bath?
I think there's other ways to
which
relax.
Which is kind of hilarious. The thought of you in a bubble bath.
I don't do well in baths. My wife loves a bath. I don't like, I.
When do you feel the most calm? What are you doing?
Oh man. The salt spot, Shavas.
Okay.
Although my brain just gets going. So I don't know what, I mean that for sure. Like that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah.
Cause it's like forced. There's no, you know, you're just laying there breathing.
Yeah. So that's something to learn from. Mm-hmm. If you have a controlled environment where you're forced to be quiet internally, then that's going to force you to relax. So you probably would need to work in a routine where you're forcing yourself to relax.
Just chill.
Yeah.
I'm the dead opposite.
Yeah. Like that's if why we work well.
Yeah. yeah. My wife and I went to Greece this last year, and the time change is so different.
Okay.
So I mean, she just falls asleep anywhere. So it's the middle of the night and I'm jet lagged. So I'm in my hotel from 11 till 5, wide awake, nothing to do, yeah. but don't really want to wake her up. And that's when I'm like stuck and I don't have anything to do. That's when I start getting real wound up.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Well, because it doesn't make sense. It'll be like, oh, you're on vacation. I'll go on vacation. And after 2 or 3 days, the longer I'm on vacation, the more wound up I get, not the more relaxed I get.
So I think it depends on what's going on. But keep in mind, your brain is responding to the change in environment, the change in situation. Vacations sometimes aren't as relaxing as we think they would be because you might be doing a whole lot. You might be trying to cram a whole lot of sightseeing in. You might feel like, oh, I need to make sure I see this because I'm not going to come back ever right, or maybe right. in a while. So mm-hmm. all that mental pressure, sometimes vacations are emotionally exhausting. You know, if you've got little kids who are whiny and kind of making it difficult, that can be exhausting too. So some of those other factors, either way, with your energy could be involved.
Now, tell us about some of your books.
My journals.
Are that, is that what they are?
Yeah.
Journals?
Yeah, okay. They're journals. So I created journals not with the idea of like trying to create any sort of, you know, fall in with that, but I recognized that I was consistently having athletes and other clients fill out the same types of worksheets and try to keep track of things. So one day somebody said, oh, it would be great if, you know, instead of a folder, that this was like a book. So I started doing that, and that just kind of evolved with the different populations that I work with and trying to find different ways to help them learn. And then I ultimately realized, well, if I just put them on Amazon, then other people, even if they're not working with me, could potentially benefit from building that self-awareness and get a little bit out of it.
Nice. And can you tell us where it's called or how we buy it? Or what it's called?
So it's on Amazon. They're all on Amazon. On my website, I have the link for that. So I've got a mental agility for athletes, mental agility for coaches, because I work a lot with sport coaches. And then I've got a kid one. So my youngest kid, when I was doing the older one, he was like, well, I want something that I could use. So I developed one that's a little bit more tailored down for kids that are under age 12. And that one has a little bit more kind of fun type stuff, some word searches and other things. And then the last one I did was for injury recovery. That's actually what I did my dissertation on for my PhD, was psychology of injury. So a lot of the athletes that come to me, it's because they're trying to build back after an injury, because that's a hard process a lot of times.
Right. Yeah. Have you heard of Joe Dispenza? Like, any of, is that, are you big into that work? Because his was like a back injury, broken back, pieced it all together.
Yeah.
His mind.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's a long process, and emotionally, I would say is more so where it comes in. You know, a lot of times when people have a significant injury, they don't feel like they're an athlete anymore.
Sorry. I mean, they're deep.
I can tell. Yeah. It's a hit to their identity, who they are as an individual, their self-worth often takes a huge hit. So there's a lot of things that you need to dig into with that.
Gotcha. What would be the best way to utilize you? Like, how could one use you best?
So ideally, one-on-one, because even though I teach large groups and small groups and that sort of thing, I feel like I do the best work one-on-one, so I can tailor, do that good needs analysis, and then adapt as people go along. So one-on-one.
Nice. And then do you do it in person, or is it Zoom, or?
So most of my athletes are in person. Most of my business professionals are Zoom. Although I have had a lot of athletes in the last year that are out of state, you know, at colleges across the country. So those are typically over Zoom.
And then what does the first session look like? And do you wear glasses during that session?
Contacts.
You don't go session one glasses?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay. You had like
I should have some fake ones just to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, because your look, like, you have to curate your look probably a little bit.
A little
based
bit.
Based on the person.
Yeah.
I'd have a calculator. You should do a calculator in your pocket, a little pocket protector.
A pocket protector.
Maybe.
Tape measure.
What would I be measuring?
I don't know. I just think like performance stuff, like.
Just a clipboard like that you're pretending to write things down on, just flipping it over.
Right fingers. Yep. Like,
just little props. So yeah, session one, what does that entail? Is it a lot of paperwork?
No, I try to do the paperwork beforehand. So I have questionnaires beforehand. So that gives me a little bit of an opportunity to score those assessments and kind of go in with an idea. So the first one is really rapport building, trying to get to know them, figure out where they're at, what their goals are, and try and dig a little bit deeper. Because like I said earlier, sometimes people aren't really clear about their goals, or maybe they have a goal that somebody has told them they should work towards. Like, oh, yeah, you'd be great if you just continue. And so we work through that, really make sure. My goal with that first session is make sure that they understand I want to help them improve their performance and love whatever it is that they do. So I think that joy is really vital for long-term sport participation in particular.
And so then they would journal, probably use the journal, and then they would come back and see you a week later or the next day.
Yeah, it depends on the competition schedule. So I always factor that in. If they're not in the middle of a season, then there's not as much pressure to kind of work. So usually 2 weeks.
Okay.
If they're in the middle of a competition season, or like sometimes somebody will come to me right as, you know, championship season's kind of coming up and all right, you know, we'll meet in 4 days kind of thing. But it always is a check-in on like, I'm giving you homework, and homework can be journaling. It can be thinking through a different thought process. And I want you to pay attention to how that works. And then we're going to talk about it the next time and see what we need to adjust.
Nice. And then, does this work for any disease processes, like any mental illnesses or like even depression, anxiety, ADHD?
Yeah. So I don't treat any of that.
Right.
But part of my training was to recognize some of those things. And there was a lot of research that says these type of mental skill development programs can ease some of those symptoms. But that's not something that I would ever consider prescribing or suggesting to clients that, yeah, we're going to alleviate that anxiety or that depression. Gotcha. Many report it does, but that's not what I'm trying to do.
Right.
And then what about the business side of it? It sounds like you go in and help teams to perform better.
Yes.
Yeah. What does that look like?
So it depends on what the team is looking for. So still needs analysis is always what I'm going to do first. And then depending on what that team is struggling with or where their goals are, then we're going to do maybe some group sessions, some workshop sessions, might be some separate sessions for different pockets. Last year I worked with just the seniors of a high school football team. So we just worked with the seniors so that they could develop their leadership skills and be able to share that with the rest of the team.
Nice.
So it just kind of depends on what the goals are.
Is there a case study of a business one that you can talk about a little bit?
Like one of the business.
Yeah. Like I think of businesses where they would go toxic. There could be the like gossiping side of it.
Yep.
There could be the inefficiency side of it. There could be the management leadership side of it. There's so many different areas. And I'm just curious where you've seen a lot of success or where you're like, that's my sweet spot.
Yeah. So I'm working through one right now. So there are two individuals on a team of, I think there's 15 people on the team. And these two individuals are not really wanting to be team players. So that first process that I've gone through, still got some work to do, is identifying everybody's core values. What are the things that matter to them individually? And then having some conversations about how other people can recognize and start to appreciate those core values. And then what does that mean in terms of acceptable behavior based on that? And then what we'll move into next is kind of team goals and team values and the things that we agree are important to us as a team. And then there's probably going to be some more individual and leader coaching. Nice. Because one of the leaders in particular, he recognizes that he's part of the problem because he kind of lets some things go that he shouldn't.
Yeah.
I find a lot of times managers and leaders, they don't hold people accountable because they're kind of scared to. So we got to work on confidence to be able to hold people accountable and hold that standard rather than just letting people go.
Nice. That's good. So we could hire you to come in and work with our team?
Yep.
Like you would do that small business stuff?
Yes.
Sweet. And then I guess, how do people find you and what's the best way to learn more and work with you?
So my website's probably the easiest, aperformancemindset.com. My Instagram is at anderson.treva, T-R-E-V-A.
No Gmail? You don't do Gmail stuff?
Yeah, Randy.
I like to ask for the Gmail.
So my Gmail is aperformancemindset@gmail.com.
Okay, that's good.
And then personal address for mail.
And personal cell phone, if you throw that out there. All right, well, thank you. This has been great.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Here.
We're here for the health of it.
For the health of it.